And Seth, you still have a job. Congratulations. You're watching T Program with Ted Rawl and John Kiriakou. It's Monday, December 8th, 2025. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Ted. Good to see you.
Likewise. Hope you had a good weekend.
Thank you, sir. You too.
I did. It's going to be cold, though.
Very cold. Really cold.
Very cold. Lots to talk about today, as always. I think I'm always going to be saying that because it's always going to be true. Hegseth, speaking of which, the WARSEC or DEFSEC, depending on your politics, has declared an end to the age of American utopian idealism. I missed it. I must have been sleeping when that happened. But anyway, no more Mr. Nice Guy, as we declared in the title of today's show. The Supreme Court is poised to, rule in favor of the administration in Trump v. Slaughter. Which is going to have some huge implications in terms of the way that the federal government works and in terms of its independence from the executive branch. We'll talk about that. I suspect as a former federal government employee, you have a few things to say about that, John. Thailand and Cambodia are back at it. So the question is, will Trump step in to try to rescue the ceasefire agreement that he negotiated 2 months ago? And also, and this is not last but not least, this Netflix Warner Brothers deal obviously has clear monopoly implications. I mean, literally, when I go to watch TV, I literally am like, my two favorite networks are either Netflix or HBO Max. I literally look at those two. I mean, these two will now be one. There's going to be fewer places for people like us to pitch in Washington. It's a monopoly. And it looks like Trump's aware of it, and he's saying that he's going to consider it. He's going to be personally involved in this decision. I'm not against that at all.
Yeah.
The more people who question it, the better. So anyway, there's that. As always, we're here Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern time. If you have questions or comments, please post them in the live chat. We are fully monetized back on YouTube. So please like, follow, and share the show. Super chats work again. I think that's about all the housekeeping we have to do until we do an ad. So, John, what do you want to do?
Well, let's talk about Hegseth. I have to say that I wasn't paying very close attention to Hegseth yesterday until you sent me this piece. This utopian idealism. What the heck's he talking about, Ted?
Yeah, you're living proof of the fact that there was no such thing.
No. Is he talking about this alleged wokeness in the military? Is that what this is about? If so, why didn't he say this a year ago?
Yeah, it's very vague. Yeah, it's vague. He's basically this is a new national security agency. New national security strategy that basically says that we're going to be looking out for America first. Here's a quote. In his speech, Hegseth said, the U.S. shouldn't be distracted by democracy building, interventionism, undefined wars, regime change, climate change, woke moralizing, and feckless nation building. We will instead put our nation's practical, concrete interests first. First of all, I want to just say, never have I agreed with anything Hegseth has said more in my entire life.
Exactly right.
However... I have to say, at the very same time, that speech is making headlines that are shared on the same exact news headline page as all these stories about, for example, the controversy he's involved with blowing up random fishermen and drug runners in the Southern Caribbean and trying to overthrow the government of Venezuela and negotiating with President Maduro for him to leave. How do you reconcile these two simultaneous actions in the same exact cabinet department?
I think they're trying to thread a needle here where they don't want to actively overthrow a government using military force. They want the government to essentially overthrow itself and put Maduro on a plane, have him go to Havana or Moscow.
Kind of like what they did with Bush did with Aristide in Haiti.
Exactly what Bush did with Aristide. That's right. And then, but on the other hand, they're able to, or they think that they will be able to couch this military action as as a MAGA action because we're not committing ground troops.
Mm.
It seems to me that they're trying to have their cake and eat it too. That's really what it comes down to.
And here's the thing, right? Like, I don't think it matters what people like us think about it because we're not the audience for mm-hmm. it. But, you know, I think MAGA world already knows all about what's going on in places like Venezuela, and they don't like it.
Mm-hmm. Nobody likes it. I mean, if you don't have the Canadians, you don't have the Mexicans, you don't have the Brazilians, you don't have the Colombians, what else matters in the Western Hemisphere?
Right. I mean, there's that Caribbean organization of, you know, what's that called? I always forget what that thing is called. It's the equivalent of ASEAN, but it's for the Caribbean
countries. Right.
And it seems like you'd want them involved. You know, I mean, here's the thing. Like, I think it's possible in the same way to say that Saddam Hussein was a bloodthirsty, torturous dictator and say we shouldn't have overthrown him. And say the same thing here, like Nicolas Maduro is maybe not like the best Venezuelan national who has ever breathed air. But, you know, and say that at the same time, it's really not our business. It's up to the people of Venezuela to get rid of him.
That's right.
I agree with you. It's a push. I mean, John, this is your wheelhouse. I mean, wouldn't this have called more typically for an old-fashioned 1960s, 1970s Latin American coup, right? Isn't that like CIA-backed covert?
Sure.
Isn't that really kind of like if that's what the administration is after?
But the problem here is that those old-fashioned CIA coups were almost always done with the support of the local military. Mm-hmm. And in this case, the military supports Maduro.
Right. So, regime change without the military in all... So even in a revolutionary situation is always impossible, right? When you ever study, it's always the military always cinches the deal in places like, you know, the French Revolution, the Russian Revolution. That's always the final thing. You have to have them. Just parenthetically, by the way, did you notice this coup attempt in Benin?
Yeah, sure did. The government announced, the military announced that a coup had taken place. And the president says, oh, not so fast. I'm in charge. You're all under arrest. There was a coup attempt, but it was mm-hmm. unsuccessful.
And that was an old-fashioned dogs of war style coup, right? Where they seized control of state media.
That's
soldiers
right.
appeared on TV.
Just the way they teach you to do it.
But it didn't really, it didn't take. I think we're just, we haven't seen the last of African coup attempts. There's just been a whole spate of them lately. All right. So, I mean, I do want to like linger a little bit on this idea of American utopianism. So let's talk a little bit about the strength of it here. I mean, the meat of it. He says, allies are not our children. Hegseth said, we can and should expect them to do their part. In other words, the U.S. shouldn't be financing the defense, the military defense of rich countries that are allies that can easily afford to pay for their own upkeep. I mean, I agree.
Yeah, I agree too. But the thing is, though, that's not going to save the American taxpayer a single dollar because we'll find a way to spend it. And it won't be on things like infrastructure. It'll be some other component of national defense, which is terrible.
It's funny because I was kind of thinking of Venezuela compared to Iraq. We were having that in the group chat discussion. And I was thinking like, in a way, right? I mean, you know, when you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And when you create this giant military industrial complex, you know, people are sitting around thinking of ways to be useful. Like, what can we do? I mean, it's not enough for them to say, let's just sit around. And if anything threatens us for real, then we'll be ready. That's just not like real. That's not like not mm-hmm. how people think. There's always ambitious human beings always want to, you know, step it up. You know, Iraq, what if they still had WMDs? Oh, well, then, you know, we could topple the whole Middle East. All the dictatorships would go like dominoes. Mm-hmm. And now this Venezuela thing is like, well, maybe we can get oil on the cheap. What is the real? Let's say Trump wins. He gets Maduro on a plane. He's gone. What's the next plan here? I mean, it's a two-part question. First of all, would it be the Trump administration's plan to find like the equivalent of an Ahmed Chalabi who is going to step up and be the new ruler of Venezuela. Would they reinstall, what's his name? The other Venezuelan guy who wanted to be president.
Juan Guaido.
Would they install Juan Guaido? It seems like that's what they would want to do.
I had this Venezuela expert on my other podcast, Deep Focus, the other day, last week. I'm not even sure we've released it yet, but I think it's coming soon. And I asked him essentially the same question. And he said, Venezuelans don't have any idea who Juan Guaido is. He was literally just a grad student at George Washington University when the first Trump term people led by John Bolton just announced that he was president of Venezuela and then forced, what was it, 36 countries to recognize him.
That's what we did with Hamid Karzai. Afghans didn't have any idea who he was. When I talked to them, they were like, who?
Yeah.
And then we just installed this guy. I mean, so I don't think there's any plan for who steps in a post-Maduro regime.
I don't think so either.
I don't even think there's a plan whether we should install them. I think it's just like, just get rid of Maduro and hope for the best, basically. Like, hey, that worked out great with Gaddafi.
You took the words right out of my mouth. That kind of policy never works. The whole overthrow policy never works. It never works out the way you think it's going to.
There's not even a best laid plan of mice and men here. There's no plan.
There's no plan.
And so, so it's like they go, Maduro goes away. What's the hope here? Is the hope that we get the oil at a discount? It doesn't work that way. Oil is a global market.
Right. And Venezuela is a member.
The Belgians get it for the same price we do.
Venezuela is a member of OPEC. They're not going to undercut themselves by giving us cheap oil. See, and this is the other question too, Ted, is what threat does Maduro pose? No threats. There aren't Americans being killed or kidnapped. There's no threat that they're going to invite the Chinese Navy or the Russian Navy in to, be right off the coast of Florida. None of that is happening. We just don't like the guy.
That's the thing too, though. Here's the thing that I get, right? Like, so we have bumper sticker politics in this country, right? I mean, Americans be working 60 hours a week. They're too busy to follow everything to the extent that they even want to. Now, if you target Iran, which is foolish, but at least there, it's like, okay, the skids have been greased from a propaganda point of view.
Yes.
Like everyone knows, like the Ayatollah was evil with his big bushy beard and that the hostages and 444 days, they know about that. People have, it's in our national consciousness. Russia, the Cold War, Stalin, all that stuff. But Venezuela, I mean, the American people have not been propagandized to think that Venezuela is anything to even think about at all.
Yeah.
Not going to be any support for this.
No, you remember just after 9/11, everybody in America wanted to go to war and just destroy Afghanistan and destroy Al Qaeda.
Which, by the way, I think, just to interrupt quickly, I think that had a lot to do with the fact, again, that the wheels had been greased because of the Taliban mistreating women, blowing up the Buddha statues a year before. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of took the words out of my mouth. There was kind of it was easy to convince Americans. You didn't even have to do any convincing. Everybody saw 9/11. They saw it all play out on TV. We wanted to kill everybody. There is no such background with Venezuela. What have the Venezuelans done to us? It doesn't make any sense.
No. And then the whole shtick here, and this, I guess this goes into sort of Fox News echo chamber stuff. Whenever the United States, when the right wants to say that there's a problem, like let's say, opioids, we'll say like they've declared war with using opium. The migrants are a war. It's an invasion. So they use military terms to adhere to these phenomena that are not military at all. I mean, we can, I'm against illegal immigration for sure. And I believe in a strong border, but it's not a war. It's not an invasion. These are people coming to find jobs and make more money. Right. And get a better life. That's what they're here for. And it's sort of, so, I mean, the thing is when you only are playing to half the audience, because only half of Americans watch Fox News and follow all this stuff. I mean, you have your ceiling of support, of popular support is inherently low. I mean, right. Even if you get 100%, you know, ideological acquisition of the people you're targeting, that's only 50% of the country. You're never going to have enough to really sustain a military conflict.
No, you're absolutely right. I see in our internal chat, Robbie is taking exception about the word invasion. It is an invasion.
Robbie, should we pop him in? Robbie,
sure, pop in.
Robbie. All right, Robbie, say your piece.
It is an invasion.
Well, you can tell by the immigrant air force and the terrible heavy weapons the immigrants are using against us.
No, I mean, no. Serious question here. If there's any other country in the world where you had 100 million people come in, would any other nation not consider that any kind of anything other than what it is, which is an invasion?
But first of all, that's not true. It's not 100 million people.
No.
But we don't.
Look, a million is too many, okay? But it's still.
I completely agree.
But it's not. I mean,
but for example, let's just say France, okay? What would happen to France if you say.
Well, they have had a huge illegal immigration problem.
Yeah, that's my point. And the thing is, like, the French are actually doing something about it. Whereas I don't know if y'all saw Tucker Carlson when he was interviewed Piers Morgan on his podcast last week. And he pointed out, though, so Pierce is that Native Brits are going to be a minority in their country in like 20 years. And Piers Morgan's like, what's wrong with that? Like, seriously? That's national suicide by demographic change.
But
that is exactly what that is.
But nobody here is arguing for illegal immigration. What we're saying is it's not an invasion. It's a flow of people. Like, for example, many, many times, you know, hundreds of thousands of Afghans, millions, have crossed the border into Pakistan.
Yeah.
And it's happened a bunch of times. And then they go back home when the conflicts are over. I mean, you know, it's kind of like that flow keeps happening. The Iranians have also taken in lots of Afghans. And so the Iranians and the Pakistanis don't look at it as an invasion. It's a flow of people. It's a migrant flow.
Okay, you're both students of history. When the Goths, the Visigoths, and the other Germanic tribes were going across the border into the Roman Empire, was it considered an invasion?
The answer is yes. Those were armed forces, right?
These people are armed with drugs and also armed with economic warfare.
You're making my point for me, Robbie.
Yeah, I know I am.
You're just saying what I'm saying, that you're adhering military terms to a non-military situation. That's all.
Because it is a military term. That's exactly what it is. I fundamentally disagree.
Okay. All right. Bye, Robbie.
We'll talk. Bye.
Okay. But you know, I'm glad he's here to say that, because it's important to represent that. A lot of people agree with Robbie.
Yeah.
Let's do some questions, John.
Yeah.
NPC 3PO, how many countries in Africa does France still control after up to and including the coup and the coup attempt in Benin? That's a good question.
I'd have to count. I don't know, actually.
Certainly that number has declined. They lost Burkina Faso. They lost Niger, right? Mm-hmm. They lost, I guess, pretty much, I'd say Mali is pretty much lost.
Yeah, they physically withdrew from Mali, what, a year ago?
But 10 months ago? John, I got to tell you, I think the French are harder to get rid of than herpes. I think they'll be back. You know, I think when Macron, who is such a weak leader, is gone, you know, it doesn't even matter if it's a lefty or a righty. Mm-hmm. France will be back in post-colonial Africa, because they mm-hmm. always are. I mean, sort of the way the tradition has always been in the post-colonial world, that the former colonial power always either has an excuse or a duty, you know, white man's burden, to step in and fix if there's like any kind of outbreak or a coup or mm-hmm. a genocide. Like, they're supposed to go and mop it up.
Mm-hmm.
And so that will be, there will be calls for that. Like, you guys broke this African country, you have to go fix it.
You know, I would say that is especially true in the Sahel.
Mm-hmm.
Just as the going got tough, the French bugged out. Like, now is the time where the world legitimately would like to see French troops just destroying Al-Qaeda.
Agreed.
Protecting children.
I got to hand it to the French. One thing that I like about them when they do these things, to the extent that it is a violation of sovereignty and all that, but I like it. They send in small forces.
Yeah, they do.
You know, they send in maybe 2,000 troops, mm-hmm. You know, but of course, badass, like foreign legionnaires, like serious motherfuckers. But it's like basically it's something the U.S. doesn't know how to do. It's a pinprick operation.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
It's surgical.
We send thousands and thousands of troops. And then we'll get bogged down for years and then declare victory and leave.
1,000, you can get them out. Easy. Yeah, 3 planes. I agree. They're gone. Okay. Rob Vake, what was the story about Mike Baker splitting Greece, John? You've never answered this story after touching on it multiple times.
Mike and a colleague were doing surveillance on a target. And they forgot to account for the most effective security system in the whole country, which is one old Greek lady peeking out of her window. And she noticed
the shutters.
She noticed these two guys sitting in a van on the street for 3 days, and she called the cops. And the cops came, knocked on the van window, told them to get out of the car. They were both wearing very poorly done disguises. But inside the van,
big nose, mustache,
basically inside the van, were other disguises and multiple identification cards and passports from different countries in different names. And so they were expelled from Greece. That's what it came down to.
Robbie, I'm going to let you come in and answer this one. From three birds, one stone. Question for you. Do you intend to legally go after the person or organization that doxed you? Ooh. If I was a lawyer, I would rep him for free. Robbie, answer.
The answer is no. That person, what they meant for ill, the Lord meant for good. It's been a blessing in disguise. And that's no small part because of the generosity and support of the audience here on the show. So, no. They tried to hurt me and it completely backfired. I'm able to do what I love doing. I'm working with two great guys and I wish them all the best, and I'm enjoying watching them cannibalize because all the doctors just unionized on Friday, so they're fucked.
Thanks, Robbie. All right, yeah. So let's see. Do we think that maybe the U.S. came into an agreement about Venezuela with Russia? Wait, do we consider the fact that maybe the U.S. came into an agreement about Venezuela with Russia in exchange for Ukraine? Ooh, that's interesting.
Ooh.
I like that.
That is interesting. I don't know. I haven't seen any evidence of it, but that would be very interesting.
It would be, I think, politics at a higher level than, you know, we're seeing that kind of, I can't imagine that kind of geopolitical horse trading in this current environment. And I'm not just, you know, using that as a way to attack the Trump administration. I don't think Putin thinks that way either. You know, this is like, you know, you always have to go to the Cuban Missile Crisis and that famous trade-off between the between the missiles pointed at the U.S. and like, you know, Kennedy promised to, at the USSR, and Kennedy promised to remove them. Where were they? Were they in
Turkey?
Turkey. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I always want to say Poland, but that was part of the Warsaw Pact
right.
at the time.
Yeah. They were in Eastern Turkey.
Okay. Thanks to US XXX. A-Rod for the $2.
Thank you.
How long till Trump tests Biden's preemptive pardons?
It's coming.
Hegseth is prime example. Why doesn't he want to try and undo it? But will that stop him for much longer? He can't have that kind of awareness.
I don't think he's going to do it. I think he's just jumping up and down and yelling about it, because if he does it and he's successful, then the next president can undo his preemptive pardons.
Okay. And yeah. Let's see one for each of us. And then we'll get back to the topics here. Tiffer, I talked about knowing Carter Burwell. He's a famous film music composer in an episode released over the holidays. That's cool. Can you talk about some famous people, you know, or maybe share a story of one of those friendships? I'll think about that. I feel like maybe that's a Rumble Premium. That's a Rumble Premium idea. That's what we'll do, because it would take up too much time here. Also, I always think about, like, I don't want to tell any stories out, any tales out of school. I know Carter wouldn't care. Johnny Jackson. John, have you heard about Admiral Leonard Francis? I've never heard.
Is that Fat Leonard? Yeah, Fat Leonard. He's a defense contractor, got himself in a whole bunch of trouble around a bribery scandal. I think it was with the Navy. And got, what, 15, 20 years in prison? He was the guy that dragged down along with him, what was his name? He was the CIA executive director under Bush. I forget his name now. Nice guy. But yeah, Fat Leonard. This was a pretty big scandal in the Navy, which seems to be prone to scandals.
Why do you think the Navy is? Yeah, it's true. You never hear about a Coast Guard scandal.
No.
Like, you know, or even Space Force.
No, Space Force.
Space Force is clean as a whistle.
I met a guy the other day who told me he was retired from the Space Force. And I said,
already?
Retired from the Space Force? I said, he just made the Space Force, but 8 years ago.
Yeah.
He said, yeah, but I was in the Air Force for 20 years, and then I switched over to the Space Force. And I said, yeah, but then the Space Force has literally nobody in space. Like, I thought it was kind of a joke.
Yeah.
Until people started transferring into it. So what do you do there? And he said, well, we just
it always freaks me out when I see the flags of all the branches of the
armed
forces.
Yeah, and you're like, what's that one?
Yeah, what's that weird looking one with the Star Trek logo on it?
Uh-huh, with the Star Trek logo, exactly, which they did on purpose.
Did they really? Uh-huh. Well, I'm glad it was on purpose, actually.
Just like, you remember the early flip phone called the StarTech?
Yes.
It was a play on Star Trek. And it was the flip phone, like the Star Trek communicator.
Star Trek has so much influence on the aesthetics of our modern technology.
Oh, my God, yes.
So the compact disc, there's an episode where there's a library on a planet that's about to be destroyed when a sun goes either red giant or supernova. And there's an old guy in a white robe, and he shows all the information of our society is stored on these discs.
On the discs.
And it's a disc like this. And the guy who invented the compact disc, he didn't invent this disc because this was the most efficient way to store data. He literally was just like, he was a Trekkie, and he's like, this looks cool, and people would buy these.
Awesome.
And also the iPad,
same thing. I want to show you something. Hold on.
Here we go. Yeah, the iPad is like basically like in Star Trek, you'll see them hand a pad to each other, a report like, here, Captain, here's the information you asked for. And, you know, or he signs off on something. It's the iPad. There was a contest in the Washington Post among cartoonists for some reason. They wanted to know what this new Apple tablet would be called. And I won the contest because I said, I think they're going to call it the iPad after Star Trek.
Check this out. Let me make sure that this is an actual dilithium crystal from Star Trek. I bought it from Scotty's son.
No way.
Yes, I did. 10
so
years
what's
ago.
It really made of? Do we know? Is it quartz?
Yeah, it's just quartz.
I figured it had to be something like that.
Cool, right?
So okay, I'm going to answer one of the questions that about like friendships. So I got to know Joe Jackson, the singer-songwriter. You know, is she really going
How cool
out
is that?
With him?
That's fantastic.
And one of the most magical memories I had was I was invited over to his apartment in New York for a small gathering of people to do for New Year's Eve. And at midnight, he came out with his keyboard and performed just for like the 15 of us, All for Auld Lang Syne, which was amazing because it's Joe Jackson. Anyway, his bathroom is Star Trek themed. And he had like a tricorder, he had a communicator, all from the original series in the bathroom. He had like all sorts of ephemera from so the first cool. season series.
I love it. I love the original one. I never really took to the other ones, but the
really,
original.
I mean, Next Gen is pretty fucking awesome. You got to get past the first season because the first season is way too much about establishing characters.
Right.
And like it hadn't really found itself. Also, Deep Space Nine is fun too, even though it's got some magical realism in it, which I'm generally opposed to. But Voyager, you know, I liked it.
I'll check it.
The Enterprise sucks. Never watch it. It
too
blows.
Bad.
Yeah.
Oh.
It does have this like insanely hot woman in it, and who's always like taking showers in the steam room and stuff. And you're just like, I know why we're doing this, but really? All right. So let's talk about, shall we talk about Thailand and Cambodia? That seems like it's worth some.
Yeah, I thought that conflict was solved and we had peace. Apparently I was wrong. And I'm unclear, Ted, as to what exactly it is they're fighting over. It can't really be this little island in the river with the abandoned temple on it. It can't be.
Well, as you know, the Thais are fiercely nationalistic.
Yes, fiercely.
Thailand is one of the only countries in the world that's never been successfully invaded by anyone else. Mm-hmm. And basically, they're like the calm, like temporally, right? Temperamentally, these people are basically, we're calm and peaceful and Buddhist. And if you fuck with us, we will kill you six ways till Sunday.
And they mean it.
We never start anything. We finish everything. That's the Thai way. I respect that a lot. And anyway, the thing is, the French drew this map, right? We talked about this earlier, so I'm not going to redo the whole thing. But anyway, the French colonial map caused this fuck up. Mm-hmm. And Cambodia is claiming, and Thailand both claim this, like, this little border area. I think that so the Thais are claiming the Cambodians started it up and shot at their border guards.
Right.
So they claim this is retaliatory. Fuck you. We're taking it over. You know, we're fighting back. They bombed Cambodia. Obviously, you and I talked about this, that there's no world in which the Cambodians can ever beat the Thais at anything.
Not a chance.
So I guess. Nope. I have to think this is for domestic Thai political consumption. This is about national pride. It's about, like, no one fucks with us. I think it's kind of like Thailand's like a little United States down there in Southeast Asia. Like, we are, do not even think about it. I really think it's just about that.
I think you're probably right. And, you know, these little border disputes, they happen all around the world. We have border disputes with Canada, mm-hmm. with Haiti, they're all over the place. Just most countries don't act on them.
Plus these frozen conflict zones in the former Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's amazing when you think how little violence there's been associated with those.
Agreed.
Ooh, interesting breaking news, which is related to one of our stories here. Paramount Skydance is stepping into the breach. They just announced a hostile takeover bid for Warner Brothers. They're challenging a $72 billion bid by Netflix. John, that number keeps changing. I keep seeing $82 billion versus $72 billion. Paramount's offer, though, is bigger than both. They're offering $108 billion, according to Variety, which I would say probably has sourced it well. So it's not over. Interestingly, I would, you know, at first thought, Paramount might be viewed more favorably by federal regulators as a suitor than Netflix, because mm-hmm. Netflix is really in the same exact business as many of the component parts.
Yes.
Of Warner Brothers.
Yes, you're right.
Not so much about Paramount. Not as much with Paramount. I mean, they have streamers. They have like Paramount Plus and stuff.
I agree, but it's not a natural fit like the other would be.
So it's like, they can make a synergistic argument better than, you know,
than
Netflix can.
But the bottom line of all this, as you said when you opened the show, is that it's just quashing any real competition. Like, everything we consume in terms of media is all owned by, you know, one of six, soon to be five companies. And
I mean,
you know, so I want something different.
John, did you see, I'm sure you did, over the weekend, the New York Times article that said everybody in Hollywood hates Netflix? Mm-hmm. And you know, and they sort of described why, mm-hmm. but basically Netflix has kind of like, I think what this is, I mean, and they're basically saying this would be the absolute death knell, the final nail in the coffin for the cinema house experience of going.
Ted, I honestly don't know the last time I went to a movie in a movie theater. Mm-hmm. And I like movies in movie theaters.
So do I.
But why spend the $20 when it's going to be on Netflix in 2 months anyway?
John, to me, the exception to that rule are these theaters like Alamo Drafthouse,
yeah,
where you can eat fun. And have beers like, while you're watching the movie.
That's right.
Then it's a whole night out. I like, and you know, Americans love multitasking. I'm no exception. We like to drive while we're texting, and we like to, you know, and we like to eat while we're watching a movie. That's what we do at home. We eat while we watch the movie. So you're like, oh, it's like, it's a night out.
Yes. Yes. That is nice.
So maybe that's the future. Independent cinema. I mean, I think it's true. It's hard to get people to just, you know, why would I go just to sit in a chair and pay $27? $27.50 is the price of a normal movie ticket in New York City now.
Are you kidding me?
One ticket, one adult ticket.
See, and I bitched and moaned when I paid $15 last time.
I bitched at 12. So yeah, so people, so it's kind of like, okay, so you go with, I mean, it's a $100 night out if it's a penny, right? I mean, for two people and some popcorn and a parking, I mean, it could be easily 150. So, you know, are people going to do that when they have a 65-inch flat screen at home with like surround sound speakers and no one kicking the back of their seat? I mean, no, they're not. And not to mention the movies aren't staying in the theater for any length of time. So there's no sense of exclusivity. No. Whenever I see that a movie is out, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm interested in that theater, that movie. And in 3 weeks, I'll watch it on streaming.
My son called me and said, you've got to see Spinal Tap 2. It's hilarious. I laughed through the whole thing. Big stars. Great. I said, great. I can't wait. I'll get around to it. Poof, it was gone. Now I'll just wait till it's out on Netflix.
Yeah, there's just no point. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I guess the question is, this is a big question. I mean, should we, you know how like a lot of countries protect their business? Like, for example, the Europeans, they protect their farmers. They're like, it's very important for us to have not everything be big farm, you know, big agribusiness. We want small family farms. So we pay taxpayers who live in big cities mm-hmm. willingly, happily pay to support small farms. It's a part of their national identity. Mm-hmm. In this country, should we, as part of our national identity, start thinking about certain lines of business? Like, you know, it's just not America without a print newspaper in your town, or it's not America really without a bookstore or without, you know, whatever, a movie theater. I mean, should that be funded, financed? You know, like,
I don't know, man, because it seems like a losing strategy to me. The world is going to continue to change. Yeah. You know, I'm going to draw a parallel. In the early 20th century, the Indiana legislature decided that pi, 3.1417, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's too complicated. So they voted and they passed a law in Indiana that pi equals 3. They did. You can.
It's the ratio. It's the ratio of the circumference of a circle, to its diameter.
And of course, pi doesn't equal 3, so it screwed everything up. And a year or two later, they had to retract the law.
That would have impacts on like acreage and stuff, like you know, land disputes.
And exactly, that's exactly what happened. So it seems like we can try to slow, you know, Indiana. Change and slow progress and it's going to fail. We're going to lose. And I feel like it's the same situation, you know, like
Indiana is to Ohio as New Jersey is to New York. We used to always make fun of them.
Oh my God. And Pennsylvania with West Virginia. Absolutely. So we can say every town needs a print newspaper, which I agree with. I was a paper boy for 5 years. That's how I got started in life, right?
Me too.
At the age of 10.
The Dayton Journal Herald.
I was the morning. Newcastle News and the Youngstown Vindicator.
Kettering Oakwood Times also.
And but that's not going to slow the phase out of print newspapers. Just like, you know, subsidizing a theater, which I also think would be great fun, isn't going to slow the demise of the theater.
Right. No, I know. But I feel like there are ways, like, for example, in Sag Harbor, the theater burned down and there was a, you know, there's a lot of rich people there. So they paid to rebuild it. And the theater came up with some really novel approaches. So they needed the capital to have the chance. And then, like, without having that, like, need to make a profit every single night, they had the breathing space to do things like, we're going to sponsor, you know, you can have a kid's birthday party. I went to one of these things at the movie theater, and they played like Warner Brothers cartoons and stuff and served food to the kids in the theater. You know, you can have events. It's an event space, and it's like,
I like that.
You know,
I like that. Hey, before we move on too, Robbie says we have an ad, but I have a complaint from a viewer that I received over the weekend.
All right, let's hear it.
Ted reads the ads too quickly.
I was doing you guys a favor. I'm trying to get through them. I don't know about you, John. I don't like, what is it, not enough time to go take a piss? Or
I don't know, man. I'll tell you, I started doing ads for the very first time on Deep Focus. Hmm. At least you don't have to say, go to www.johnlovesgold.com. That's www.johnlovesgold.com. Do you have gold in your IRA?
See, I would want everybody to read the ads really fast. That's like on, you know, like on radio when they do the station IDs for stations that have like multiple broadcasters, like, you know, WQXR, 104.5.
Right.
I'm like, you don't need to linger on those. Like, just like, you know, you can sound like what that band with the squeaky voices. I forget what they were called. All right. Anyway, let's answer some questions. And Robbie, yes, whenever you're ready to put up that ad. And I'm sorry about that complaint that you got, John, but I'm going to read that ad faster than ever. Okay. John, do you feel the U.S. deserves the opioid crisis after doing the same to Russia with Afghan opium?
I you know, I hate to say it, but yeah.
Whoa.
This was a precedent we set. And I mean, we don't really have the moral high ground to point the finger at the Chinese. The Chinese are just as guilty as we are. I have no love of the Chinese, that's for sure. But, you know, maybe I'm too much of an idealist when it comes to the kind of country that I think we should be or think perhaps we once were. But, yeah, we were wrong about poppy in Afghanistan, like the Chinese are wrong about fentanyl.
Yeah, that's for sure. Okay, but I feel sorry for the victims.
I do, too. My brother-in-law died of an overdose.
It's hard
terrible. It's a terrible thing.
It's hard to make it to 30 without knowing someone who dies of an overdose. Mm-hmm. All right, let's do this ad. You probably noticed Rumble is growing fast and it's not slowing down. They're building a real alternative to big tech that puts creators first and actually protects free speech. And now there's Rumble Premium, an easy way to upgrade your experience. With Premium, you get ad-free viewing across the platform, no pre-rolls, no interruptions, just the content you came for, plus Premium members unlock exclusive content like bonus videos, behind-the-scenes drops, and more from your favorite creators. Right now, Rumble's offering $10 off an annual subscription. Just go to rumble.com/premium and use the promo code STUDIO at checkout. That's rumble.com/premium, promo code STUDIO. No ads, more freedom, and content you actually care about. That's the deal. Okay, we have a lot of questions, John, so let's fly through them here. A more lighthearted question. Do you guys have favorite conspiracy theories like the parallax view, 3 days of the Condor, et cetera? I love both of those. I loved Day of the Jackal. We talked about that.
Day of the Jackal was so great.
We did an entire, I would say All the President's Men counts as a conspiracy movie.
Oh, that was terrific as well. What about Ronin?
Great.
So underrated. Mm-hmm. Such an underrated movie.
It's not a movie, but I would say The X-Files qualifies as the mother of all conspiracy, everything in broadcast.
I agree. Very well done. A little bit ahead of its time.
Totally. You know, it almost failed, right? Like it basically was about to be canceled. It aired for one or two seasons or something like that. They were going to cancel it. And then Fox had something else fall through. So they were like, okay, just keep that rolling until we get our new thing up and running. And then that was the year it caught fire.
You know, David Duchovny, I saw him in an interview one time and he was talking about a similar issue about how there are so many fingers in the recipe that becomes a TV series that it's a miracle that any series succeeds. He said that he came up with this idea, he had a brother who died and I think it was an overdose, but he came up with this idea for a drama on this family torn apart by drug addiction and, you know, blah, blah, blah. By the time it got through the process, when he sold it, they were like, oh my God, this is so powerful. It's going to be one of those must see television series. We're going to buy it. We're going to make it. We're going to green light it. By the time it was done and every asshole studio executive got a whack at it, It was a comedy. And he withdrew from it because he said it disrespected his brother.
It's gotten so fucked up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Things, I mean, it's so dumb. I mean, the process, I had this book called Real Americans Admit the Worst Thing I've Ever Done, where I collected confessions from people about the worst thing I've ever done.
Awesome.
And it was in development twice. And the last time was like during the peak woke period a couple of years ago. And they were like, Ted, would you be willing to be the host of this? I was just going to sell the idea. I'm like, if you think, I mean, I don't care, but if you want me to. And then, so they were like, yeah, we want you to be the host. Then they're like, we did some pitch meetings and they're like, they you're too white. And I'm like, okay, well, they're like, do you care if the host is black? And, you know, not anything else, black.
Who cares?
And I'm like, I don't care. The host can be black. Do you care if the host calls himself Ted? I'm like, there are black guys named Ted. Sure. I don't care. I was like, I kept saying, like, sure, you guys do whatever you want. I don't care. I just kind of, I would like to have some money. That's all. And then in the end, they were like, oh, well, we can't do it because if anyone ever finds out that our black host was based on an old white guy, then they'll be mad. And I was like, you people are so fucked up and so stupid. I don't even know what to say. And everybody who's been, there was a compilation, I was not part of this, of cartoonists who were all, it's all collections of their Hollywood development hell stories. And it's great. It's all like just one stupid story after another.
Yeah, like I said, it's a miracle that anything gets made.
Oh, I feel anything. Like they don't, in Hollywood, they don't do anything. My agent, hey, if you're watching, Kevin, how are you? He literally, like, it's like there's always a reason why you can't do things. Oh, what's going on right now? Oh, like right now. Oh, well, you know, people are really getting ready for the Christmas holidays.
Yes.
So really nothing's happening in Hollywood.
Nothing's right happening. And nothing's happening because the Cannes Film Festival is a month and a half away.
Right.
And nothing's like, happening because it's Hanukkah.
They're recovering from the holidays.
Nothing gets done. Nobody works.
No, they don't do. I don't know how. I actually don't know how they make a living. Because nothing ever. It's like whenever I watch a movie, I'm like, wow, I can't believe a movie got made out of this. I mean, you think about like journalism is so different. They're banging out thousands of things every single day.
Yes. Ridiculous.
Question for both hosts. What's our opinion on MH370? That's the Malaysian airline plane that went down in the Indian Ocean. It's still all over Twitter 10 years later.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think one of two things happened. I think it was either suicide, like that German guy who tanked the plane into the, because apparently the pilot.
Or the Egyptian. Yeah.
Yeah. Or gas, right? Like a gas filled up the plane, because that's happened too. And they all went unconscious. I'm leaning more towards theory one, but
what do you think? I agree completely. I think it was probably a suicide. Like in that Egypt Air crash in, what was it, Switzerland or something, where the only thing that they were able to get off the black box was the co-pilot just saying, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, and then it crashes.
And the German guy in the French Alps, right? I think that was Lufthansa, could be wrong. John, question for both of us. Do we like the outlaw Josie Wales?
Oh, yeah.
I love those movies so much.
Me too. And I still watch it on, I DVR it. It's on MeTV.
By the way, The Star Chamber. Great paranoid movie.
You know, that's another one that's underrated. I like The Star Chamber.
Vicky in Greece claims that Enterprise is her favorite. Okay.
Hot really?
Women, says Ray. I can't even imagine. I think, well, I mean, there are, I've heard that opinion expressed. Fluidic Poly. John, since you worked in the Middle East for a long time, do you ever think that all the Arabs being united was ever feasible?
No.
And create a country like China? Ooh, that's an interesting question.
No. There, people seriously underestimate the dislike and the distrust that Gulf Arabs, Peninsula Arabs, have toward other Arabs and vice versa. Yeah, they're not the same people.
And don't forget, the Chinese weren't brought in because they all got along, right? They were all unified under they were forcibly unified under an incredibly violent king, mm-hmm. and who became emperor. Question, what's the, from Madara Slan, 9392. What's the agenda and role of Ahmed al-Shara, the Syrian president, in Syria and globally? What's the agenda and role?
Well, he's the savior of Syria and all things Syrian, isn't he? Mm. You know, I said on a podcast the other day,
he's a pure and noble breed, as the Kings would say.
Yes. I have no inside information whatsoever. None, zero. But I'm making an educated guess that this guy was probably a longtime CIA asset. And he found himself at the threshold of power, and the CIA pushed him right through the door. And now he's the leader of Syria, and everybody's happy.
Yeah.
Except the Christians and the Druze.
Yeah. Nothing to add there. Peruse, do you guys know if the CIA has a hand in spy novels, or are they more focused on influencing movie scripts?
Yeah, it's movies and television. They've got there's a dedicated branch inside the Office of Public Affairs, whose job it is solely to liaise with Hollywood studios and to give them whatever they need to make a pro CIA product.
Novelists I've known a couple of novelists who tried to get help from the CIA. They just wanted information to fact check to make sure their shit was right.
Yeah.
And they basically got no help.
No help. Oh, tsunami, breaking news. There's a,
yes, this
powerful
is
another earthquake.
Yes. So CBS News is saying that a powerful earthquake has hit off the northern coast, off the coast of Hokkaido. Hokkaido is this giant island, sort of like off the coast of Siberia and Japan. There's now a tsunami alert of up to 10 feet. There's no danger, according to the U.S., of a tsunami hitting the west coast or the west coast of Canada or Alaska, because I guess they can tell which direction things are going. So we will, if we learn anything more about that, we'll let you know. John, from Freud, you talked about how Homeland, the show, is very close to reality. What specifically did they get right that Hollywood usually gets wrong? Good question.
The complexity of operations and planning operations was right on. And the psychological pressure that CIA officers are under, leading to many of them cracking. The only real exception that I took to Homeland was that if you crack overseas, and it happens, I saw it happen to three different colleagues, they don't leave you in place to just be nuts and continue doing your operations.
They pull you out.
They pull you out and they put you in a hospital until you're not nuts. And then they send you back overseas.
I mean, people don't. It's funny. I knew a guy for he was a reporter. This is not the same thing at all, but it is kind of similar. He was stationed in Kabul in 2001, and he cracked after just 3 weeks. And
3 weeks.
Like, 3 weeks. He was at the he was hanging out at the Intercontinental Hotel in Kabul, which granted was pre-renovation.
Yeah.
But still, I remember we were all talking about what a pussy. You're like,
you're in the wrong line of work, buddy.
Yeah, we're sleeping hard on the ground outside, and you know you're like you're hanging out in Kabul where nothing was going on really. It was all in his mind, right?
I remember the last time I was in Kabul, I wanted to take my security detail and my translator out to lunch, and I said, let's get a nice lunch, right? Let's spend some money, nice lunch. Mm. So we go to this kebab place, and it was nice. They had like a fountain inside, and by Kabul standards, it was nice.
Sure.
They blew it up the very next day. Taliban went in, just blew it up to a million pieces, killed a dozen people. And I remember thinking, that's unfortunate. Okay, well, now what are we doing today, guys?
Yeah,
you have to roll with the pressure, or the pressure is going to destroy you.
Yeah, you're right. It's like not the job for you. Talked about the Pearl Continental Hotel. I stayed at two of those that subsequently got blown up. Really missed that hotel. It was a great hotel. But anyway, we should talk a little bit before we go, and we'll try to get to more questions. Trump versus Slaughter. So this is really interesting. It's an echo of a 1935 case. Back in 1935, FDR fired a member of the Federal Trade Commission, which was an organization he created, right? A new agency. Humphreys. Humphreys was a conservative, and he was standing in the way of New Deal reforms. FDR was pissed and shit-canned him. Humphreys refused to leave. Humphreys sued. It said, this is an independent agency. The president doesn't have the right to sue. it went all the way to the Supreme Court. By the time that they went got to the Supreme Court, Humphreys had died. And his estate continued the lawsuit. His estate won and said that the government owed compensation to his estate. And the Supreme Court agreed unanimously with Humphreys' estate. And that's called the Humphreys' estate case. So now this lady, Slaughter, Ms. Slaughter, has sued Trump for firing her from the FTC. In the initial briefing, it looks like the Supreme Court majority, the 6-3, is predisposed to agreeing with the administration and will reverse the Humphreys decision. If so, this would mean that the Trump administration and future presidents would have basically control, executive branch control, over all of these quote unquote formerly independent regulatory agencies like the SEC. You can see the problems here, right? The Communications Commission, all these agencies that are supposed to be independent. I don't know. I mean, I think the Supreme Court is going to rule for Trump.
I think they are too. I think the Supreme Court is a shell of what it used to be. It's not judicially independent. It really isn't. Some of these decisions, I mean, I thought Citizens United was bad, but some of these decisions are just so nakedly partisan that it's going to take a generation or two to get back into some state of equilibrium.
Although you could argue, John, the first one was partisan too, because it was a right-wing court that hated FDR and ruled against him.
That's true. That's true, which is why he wanted to expand it to, you know, whatever it was, 15 seats or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bruce Fein says all the time that there is no constitutional mandate on the size of the Supreme Court. We can have 50 people on the Supreme Court. It's just, it'll be however big Congress wants to make it.
And then meanwhile, we've capped the number of congressmen at 454, and even 454.
454 or 435?
Oh, 435.
Yeah, 435, yeah.
435, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah, like, which also doesn't make
sense. It kept
growing
up until a certain point, right?
Yeah.
And then they stopped it.
You know, I remember when I was working on Capitol Hill the first time, I was an 18-year-old intern, and it was like 700,000 people to a district. And now here it's 1.5 million people to a district. You can't represent all those people. I mean, not appropriately anyway.
No, you can't. Guys, we're done. It's been a fast hour. John, always a pleasure.
Good to see you, Ted.
We're back tomorrow at 9 a.m. Eastern time. We're here Monday through Friday. Thanks for like, following, and sharing the show. Thanks for your donations. Please stay tuned to the TMI show with me and Manila Chan. That is coming up right after this. If you're on Rumble, it'll just be automatic. If you're on YouTube, you're going to have to go over there and find it if you're interested. Thanks a lot. See y'all later. See you tomorrow, John.
See you tomorrow.